Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
I think it's one of the most difficult things, not just in business, but in sports, to oversee what is a constantly changing mercurial operation, a sports entity, any major professional sports team. Chris McGowan of the Trailblazers has done a really nice job, not only with the Blazers, but throughout his career with various entities. Now the CEO of Vulcan Sports and Entertainment, which puts him sort of over the umbrella of the Blazers and the Seahawks and some other things. And here's a guy who makes it look easy and is known in the industry as a smart guy who's very relatable. Chris McGowan joining us. Where are you right now?
I am in my home office. I had a bunch of meetings this morning, and I'm actually getting ready to go to my real office to do a couple things this afternoon.
Do you have Zoom exhaustion yet?
Yes. It is intense. My secret is when I get exhausted, I just do walk and talk. So I'll just do a phone call and walk around my neighborhood when I don't want to do a Zoom call. But I think you definitely have to do that every now and then, or it just gets too intense.
What has this been like for you? And I know, like, you know, the stoppage, I thought the NBA did a nice job of being a leader when this all happened. But, you know, take us through your world. You're running an operation. You got tough decisions to make. You got, you know, big things going on. What was this all like for you months ago as it unfolded?
Well, we could kind of feel it coming because everything was getting worse. And I remember we had a game, and then the next night we had a concert. And I was at the concert, and I actually felt like weird being there because we just felt like everything was going to get shut down, and it did. And you know what we've done is we've transitioned pretty seamlessly to work at home. So our staff's done a really good job of doing that. And what I've tried to do is just connect more with the staff. And, you know, we've had, we were actually talking about it this morning. Our leadership team has been meeting every day since March 14th during the week. And it's been, actually, we're going to take it to 3 days a week now because we've gotten into such a good rhythm. But we've just tried to stay as connected as a leadership team, communicating every day to try to work through these various challenges, which, to be honest, change on a daily basis. So we just tried to ramp that up.
The sort of work from home thing, I've enjoyed it. I'm a self-starter. I've never really had a desk at the Oregonian. I like writing other places and sort of being in my element. But there's a certain level of accountability you got to have personally. What do you think the world's going to look like moving forward when it comes to that brick-and-mortar office versus, you know, people working from home?
I think it'll be a hybrid. I don't think you'll ever get away from, you know, an office environment because people do want that and need that. But I think organizations, a lot of sports teams are going to be a lot more open to allowing people to work from home or actually work from anywhere. And you'll see people doing a little bit of both. And that's kind of what we intend on doing. Obviously, in sports, it's about bringing people together. And, you know, we have to do a lot of, you know, relationship building and stuff like that. And, you know, you want to do that in person when it's safe. But I could see us doing a little bit of both when, you know, we get back to a more normal environment.
Let's go back to the mid-90s, University of Delaware. You're captain of the soccer team. Did you know at that time, like, hey, I want to be in sports management? Or what were you thinking?
It took me a while. Like, it was towards the end of my college that I quickly realized that I wasn't good enough to be a professional player. And, you know, right when I was graduating was like the first year of the MLS. So, you know, it was interesting because, you know, as a passionate person playing soccer, there were actual jobs on the business side for professional soccer teams. So, you know, I initially started thinking, you know, in that regard that I could maybe get on with an MLS team. And I actually had a couple interviews with one and got a job offer. And I also got a job offer with an NHL team. And I obviously took the job with the LA Kings right when I graduated from college. But it wasn't until my junior year where I started kind of realizing that you could be involved in professional sports by not being a player, and that there were people getting hired in ticket sales offices and things like that. So, and I started working on a plan, you know, towards the end of my college career, and fortunately it's worked out pretty good.
You have, you know, obviously, you know, risen from that. You helped open the Staples Center. You've worked in hockey. You've worked in soccer. You're now, of course, involved with Vulcan as CEO of Vulcan Sports and Entertainment. What is that? What's that include? What's Chris McGowan? What's on your plate when I throw that title out?
Well, I mean, the vast majority of my job is still Trailblazers. I'm the most involved in kind of the day-to-day of the running the Trailblazers business. But the president of the Seahawks reports into me, so I spend a lot of time with him, you know, helping him make major decisions and help him kind of run the Seahawks organization. Is obviously a really, really good organization, you know, on the football field and off. So I don't have to do a lot because the president there is really, really good as well, Chuck Arnold. So I just interact with him a lot. And then I also represent our 25% ownership stake in the Sounders. So I do quite a bit with the Sounders and, you know, Adrian and their owner. So my job's probably 60-40, 60% Blazers and 40% other Vulcan entities. But still, I spend the vast majority of my time is still on the Blazers.
In October, it'll be 2 years since the passing of Paul Allen. You now have Jody Allen more involved on a day-to-day basis. That transition, what has it been like? We don't get a chance often to hear from Jody. What is she like to work with as an owner?
Well, I mean, those transitions are always really hard, and she's made it as easy as a transition like that can be. She's, you know, pretty active. She's around and available for, you know, all major decisions. So she's been great. She's also, you know, been big on stability in all of the organizations and the key people that work in the key positions, and the football team, the basketball team are, you know, have been here a while or are going to be here a while. And I think that's super important as well. She's been, you know, engaging with the leagues and the NBA and the NFL offices. So we couldn't really ask for, you know, obviously a tough thing to go through, but from my perspective, the transition has been very, very smooth, and she's been super helpful, you know, on all the things that we have to do as an organization.
Chris McGowan is with us, Trailblazers president. One of the cool things that, you know, I see that you've brought to Moda Center is there's a more local feel to it. And I mean, like, the vendors that you see inside the arena, you've got a lot of, like, local restaurants and stuff, and it feels more local. Was that intentional? Was that something you did, or did that just happen through kind of the osmosis and the changeover of concessions and stuff?
No, it's very intentional. You know, I had the benefit of not being from here, but when I moved here, you know, Portland has a definite vibe and it has an aesthetic. Like, when you go out in the downtown area, you go to restaurants, it feels a certain way. And I just felt like at the time the Rose Garden didn't feel that way. And that's what makes Portland so special. So, you know, the easiest way to do it, the quickest way to do it in the eyes of the fans is through food, which is a big passion of everyone that's from Portland. So, you know, we brought lots of local food and lots of local breweries into the arena, but also, you know, we try to make the arena feel and look like, you know, Portland or Oregon. I think the Timbers have done an excellent job with their aesthetic and their facility as well. And it's just something that, you know, I don't know if the people prior to me focused as much on, but I thought it would be something that our fans would enjoy. Certainly they have, and we try to be focused on that every year, trying to bring improvements into the arena.
Chris McGowan with us, Trailblazers president, CEO, Vulcan Sports Entertainment. You know, you get an you know, we're all looking at the NBA, we're looking at baseball, the NFL, college football, we're trying to figure out kind of, you know, they're all rubbernecking at each other. You're in a unique position in that you sort of see the COVID-related issues that the NBA is facing, the bubble. You see and hear the NFL talking about it. How different are the approaches of those entities? How much collaboration do you see?
Well, I mean, all the leagues are collaborating for sure. The commissioners are collaborating, and, you know, everyone's focused on the most important thing, which is safety. And the plans are all, you know, a little bit different, but the amount of time and energy that the leagues are putting into ensuring that the athletes are safe is pretty mind-boggling. The word I've gotten from Orlando that everyone's feeling really safe and comfortable there, and that the NBA has really hit it out of the park from that perspective. And, you know, now the next evolution of that is, can you do it not in a bubble? And then there's examples of it being successful throughout the world. If you look at what the Premier League in England just did, they were able to do it successfully, and Bundesliga in Germany was able to do it successfully. So it can be done, but everyone's just got to be willing. I mean, there is a little bit of risk to everything. And then, you know, there are going to be, you know, for every couple steps forward, there are going to be days where we feel like we take steps backwards. And I think that's maybe what you're seeing with Major League Baseball. And, you know, for the industry's sake, I hope that, you know, it's a bump in the road and it gets under control and they have a really successful go at trying to do this concept of a season. And, you know, we're just all making steps forward and, you know, get to a point where eventually we can bring fans back. And, you know, that's what we're focusing on as an organization is, you know, when we can bring fans back safely, we want to make sure that our arena is as safe as possible. And then we're able to explain to our fans all the things that we're doing to ensure that when they do come to our arena, it is safe.
Chris, you know, when Blu-ray came out, I made a big investment. I bought a bunch of DVDs that were Blu-ray, and now I look back and I go, you know, that probably wasn't the best investment, right? You know, everybody's streaming. Is there a risk here amid the coronavirus of making too big of an investment in things that are going to help you today but might not be, you know, useful to you 2, 3, 4 years from now?
I think so. I think you can get caught up and forget that, you know, there is a lot of good progress being made on antivirals and vaccines. And, you know, experts say that someday the risk will go away and we'll get our arms around this. And people, in my opinion, are going to want to get back to concerts and sporting events. And, you know, we're all going to learn from this and get better, you know, when it comes to things like disinfecting arenas and cleaning and, you know, all those types of things are just going to make us better when we do get beyond this. And, you know, hopefully, you know, what you read about vaccines is true and vaccines are going to get here sooner versus later. And you can't, you know, lose sight of that. But at the same time, there's going to be a reality where it may be safer to bring fans to the arena in limited capacities. And we want to make sure that if there's technology or things out there that can make it safer before all that stuff happens, then we're going to want to do it. And we view it as a worthwhile investment. And we're prepared to invest to make sure that, you know, when it is safe to bring people back, that, you know, we're doing all the right things that they would expect us to be doing.
How much of what you see across sports right now is about fulfilling television obligations? You've got leagues that are committed to certain TV, number of TV dates. And, you know, I know a lot of us really want the competition and we're going to, you know, but it feels like even baseball, they're playing 60 games in 66 days. It's like they're just, you know, they're trying like heck to get those in. But from the business side of it, is it about TV? How much of this is about TV?
I mean, it's quite a bit. I mean, those are big contracts and we want to fulfill them if we can do it safely. And, you know, obviously when we cut the season short, there were a lot of, you know, things that we owed to our TV partners. And I think a lot of what's happening in Orlando is about competition and keeping the brand going. And, you know, we believe that sports is good for the country. And you can see early on that ratings are really, really good. I think they're going to be unbelievable once we start playing real games in the NBA. But sure, I mean, that's a part of it. Also part of this is fulfilling sponsorships. And, you know, we're fortunate to be playing in Orlando and we have, you know, at least 8 games to play. And you're going to see some of our biggest partners, you know, featured prominently during those broadcasts. So, I mean, it's a little bit of everything. But, you know, the competition side of thing is big as well. I mean, you don't want to go months without having professional athletes being able to compete. So I think it's just trying to check a lot of boxes, but certainly TV is one of the big ones.
Chris, the family, you've got a family working from home. It's a challenge. I've got kids running around here while I'm doing a radio show from home. I think, you know, it's a weird time with kids in schools, too. I mean, we're all trying to adjust. I think it's just been neat to see sports where we all view sports as a leader. Sports really is leading. And I think the NBA was that first serious you know, hey, wake up call. There's something serious going on, that a lot of people who didn't know what was going on suddenly went, uh-oh, there's something going on. I think it's been inspiring to see sports take that lead.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're seeing sports take the lead in a lot of important conversations. And, you know, we view ourselves as a big platform that can be used in a positive way. And if it's helping people, you know, get through a pandemic, and the importance of wearing masks, or using our brands as platforms for social justice and causes and voting and all of that type of stuff, I think that shows the power of sports. And, you know, we're lucky we have a great commissioner that has been supportive of all that from day one. And I think he's the best leader in professional sports. And, you know, we're in good hands, and evidenced by, you know, the early success of what's going on in Orlando. But, you know, I think you just got to remember that the NBA, you know, was doing really, really well prior to this. And I think we're all going to come out of it stronger, and it just may take a little bit of time. But, you know, I know that's what all my colleagues in the league are doing, and the league office is working, you know, tirelessly to you know, get through this, is essentially what we're all trying to do.
How, with regards to small market teams, and, you know, this comes up a lot, and I've got people texting me going, hey, ask them about, you know, how can small market teams compete? How tuned in are you on that front versus maybe the basketball operations side to maybe advocating for a level playing field, and where small market teams feel like, you know, year in and year out, they're in the mix?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's both. It's, you know, Neil, it's definitely a topic that Neil's super involved in, and it's a topic that, you know, I'm involved in as well. I mean, you know, fortunately, there are some good systems in the NBA that do make it a little bit easier for small markets to compete. I think you're seeing some really great competitive small market success in our league as well. But those are, you know, things that we work on, you know, daily. It's, you know, frankly, it's easier to generate sponsorship revenue in bigger cities than it is in Portland. So we just have to be better and more innovative to be able to compete. And I think we do a good job of that. But that topic is important to me and Neil pretty equally.
Growing up, who was your team? NFL, soccer, what was your sport? Who was your team you followed as a fan?
So I was a military kid, so I moved around a lot. So I have teams from a lot of cities. So in football, we were a Dallas Cowboys family. My mom is from Texas, so that was always a big deal for us. And basketball, we were a Denver Nuggets family. My dad,
Alex English,
Dan Issel, Alex English, all those guys were kind of the team we followed in the NBA. And so those were probably the two biggest that we followed. Soccer wasn't professionally huge when I was growing up, so didn't really have, you know, a soccer team, and kind of a bummer, but those are the two teams.
Can you still kick the ball around?
Maybe once or twice. I watch a lot of soccer because I have a 16-year-old who's pretty serious about it, so until he gets his driver's license, I'm always you know, picking them up from practice or taking them, and I always try to sneak in a few minutes of watching when I can, so... But I don't play as much as I'd like to be honest.
All right. Well, Chris, I really appreciate you making time for us. Love picking your brain a little bit. We'll get you back on another time. But stay safe and keep doing what you do. I appreciate you.
Yeah, same. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, and hopefully we'll see you soon.
All right. Chris McGowan, he is the Trailblazers president, and he is CEO of Vulcan Sports and Entertainment. I think it's a really interesting conversation on a number of fronts. First of all, I do think there's going to be a temptation in the sports management world to sort of implement a bunch of safety protocols and investments inside their own arenas that, forgive my analogy, may end up like the Blu-ray DVD or that big disc player that you had. It, you know, I've got like 200 DVDs that, frankly, unless there is a internet outage, I don't know how useful they are, but I kind of wonder what sports franchises are going to do. Where are they going to spend their money? How are they going to invest? And by the way, 2 years from now, will the investment that they make be worthwhile? Second thing, and maybe a larger issue for you as a fan, is just about the competitive balance in the NBA. And I have not always felt like every small market team had a shot. I look at the Sacramento Kings. I look at the Milwaukee Bucks. I look at the Thunder. I look at the Blazers, New Orleans. I've looked at different teams over the years. And I thought, well, yeah, Milwaukee's got, a great player. Can they hang on to him? Portland, feisty, really tough out in the 90s and right around 2000. Not a fun team to play against, but they've had some trouble getting some traction and attracting free agents. It's become a summer problem every summer. Big disappointment. And so it's really about retention if you're the Blazers. So I do think that those are big issues that the league is facing like today. I also think it's interesting to pick the brain of the guy who is behind the scenes, calling some shots, sort of setting the tone for the flavor of the organization. So I appreciate Chris McGowan breaking the ban and coming on this radio show to talk about things. And then the third thing is Jody Allen as an owner. How different is she than Paul? How engaged is she? Does she want to own this team long term? If not, what's her plan? I think those are all questions that are facing the Trailblazers organization. What kind of owner is she going to be? Is she invested? I like that she's present. I like that she has sought continuity. I think that's really smart. I think we could all learn from that. Her brother passed away in October of 2018. And you look around, it's not like they shook up the front office of the Seahawks. It's not like they shook up the front office of the Blazers. They didn't. They just kind of went, all right, everybody, let's get you some job security. They immediately extended everybody, gave everybody job security, and then they said, okay, where do we go from here? But I think it was smart, at least to kind of catch your breath and not make a bunch of rash decisions in the wake of what was a big shift at Vulcan with the passing of Paul Allen. So there you go. Chris McGowan, good stuff. Alex Molden's coming up, former NFL defensive back. Father of eight children, including Elijah Molden at the University of Washington, former Oregon Duck. He'll be with us. He's got eight children and a podcast. What's his life like amid a pandemic? Leave it here. Well, they'll be coming out with their football schedule on Friday. Getting some rumblings about that already. I'll share that coming up. I mentioned on yesterday's show that I did put a deposit down on a Ford Bronco. They're bringing the Bronco back after like 30 years of not having the Ford Bronco. Here's the deal with that. If you are interested in checking out the all-new Ford Bronco or the Bronco Sport, which, by the way, it's worth just looking at. You can go to GreshamFord.com or you can go to Ford.com. And while you're there, if you want to reserve your Bronco, which I did, all you do is you pick out which one you want and then you note which dealership you want to pick it up from. I chose Gresham Ford. The system tried to suggest another dealership because it's closer to me, and I instead said, nope, I want to pick it up at Gresham Ford because I know the people there, and it's just a few miles further for me, but I chose them because that's my dealership. You hear me talk about them. They support the BFT Foundation. They are near and dear to my heart, and so it is a $100 refundable deposit. So it's refundable, and it just reserves that Bronco for you from that dealership, and I did it. And then later, the 17-year-old, I said, hey, check this out. Check out what I did today. And obviously, her eyes were like, is that for me? I'm like, no, that's for me. Okay. I don't know what your first car was, Judah Newby or Juby or whatever we're calling you. I don't know what your first car was, but I think you ruin a kid if you give him a brand new car. There's no way she's getting the brand new car as her first car.
Yeah, you got to start them slow, both literally. A car that probably doesn't have more than four gears, just to be careful. A fixer-upper probably isn't a bad idea, just so they can learn responsibility. And not a nice car. Not a brand new car, okay? I don't understand parents that give their kids brand new cars. That is the most foolish thing that you can do, because A, they're going to ruin it, and B, they haven't earned it. Maybe I'm trying to make up for past slights in my childhood, but You got to earn the right to have a nice car. Buy it yourself. Yep. Don't have it gifted to you right out of the gate. Well, I mean, what kind of message is that?
My parents trained me well. They gave me a 1977 Buick LeSabre. The top was peeling. It was not a nice car. We talked about this the other day. But, man, I took care of it because it was my car. And I learned on that car, you change your oil, you take care of the car. And then later, when I got a job and a nicer car, I knew what to do with it. All right, coming up, Alex Molden. He's got 8 kids. How does that work? Like, literally, I see the van driving all over the suburbs, dropping kids off in the morning, picking them up from school. You know, he should sell advertising on the side of that van. There's a revenue stream there.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.